morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Cameco Corporation fourth quarter and year-end results conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Bob Lilly, Director, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Lilly.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to Cameco's fourth quarter conference call to discuss the financial results. Thank you for joining us. With us today are four of Cameco's senior executives. They are Jerry Grandy, President and CEO, Kim Goheen, Senior Vice President and CFO, George Acey, Senior Vice President, Marketing and Business Development, and Tim Gitzel, Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer. Jerry will open the call with comments on Cameco's operating results and updates on our operations, development projects, and global markets. Then we'll open it up for your questions. Today's conference call is open to all members of the investment community, including the media. During the Q&A session, please ask one question plus one follow-up if needed. Please note that this conference call will include forward-looking information, which is based on a number of assumptions and actual results could differ materially. Please refer to our annual information form and MD&A for more information about the factors that could cause these different results and the assumptions we have made. With that, I'll turn it over to Jerry.
Okay, and thank you, Bob, and welcome to all of that have joined us today to discuss Cameco's fourth quarter and annual results. With a global economic recovery that has been slow in starting, not everyone has reported 2009 as positive. But for Cameco, 2009 was a very good year. It was a year which saw a new record for revenue, a 30% increase in cash from operations, and production success from each of our operating assets. The second to the last day of 2009 saw the successful exit from the gold business. This allowed Cameco to enter 2010 as a pure-play nuclear energy investment. This long-anticipated milestone was in keeping with Cameco's vision of being a dominant nuclear energy company, producing uranium fuel and generating clean electricity. We intend to retain and strengthen our leading position as a trusted supplier to utilities around the globe, and our goal is to double our annual uranium production to help fuel the nuclear renaissance. We have said doubling our production can be achieved by building upon our existing foundation, a strong and diversified mineral asset base that we have developed over the past decade at locations around the world. In 2009, our internal program to strengthen operations at existing mines paid dividends. Output from each and every one of our five operating mines surpassed their production levels of 2008, and either met or exceeded their forecast production for 2009. A few examples tell the story. At McArthur River, new milestones were achieved in the mine's development. The extensive preparation work, including the innovative freeze wall development required for mining the next two zones, was successfully completed. We expect these two zones will now provide access for ore for the next 10 years. This demonstrates our ever-increasing understanding of how to operate within the challenging geology of the Athabasca Basin while achieving our production forecast from existing zones. At Key Lake, a well-planned and executed mill maintenance shutdown taken last spring allowed uninterrupted production for the remainder of 2009. As a result, Key Lake took advantage of the new flex production provisions within our license, and this added another 200,000 pounds to Cameco's share to close out the year. At Rabbit Lake, consistent production continued as the Eagle Point mine entered new development areas, with exploration continuing to identify resources that hold the promise of an extended mine life. Production goals were exceeded at our U.S. in-situ recovery operations, and the ramp-up of production at our Inkai joint venture occurred at a pace greater than what was anticipated. Inkai is on track to reach its initial license limit by 2011. In fuel services, we saw both increased realized prices for conversion services, and higher production as our Port Hope facility returned to steady operations in the last half of the year. And at Cigar Lake, our systematic and deliberate approach to remediation was evident. The dewatering phase is over. Now that we can walk through the 480-meter level, we are in a position to assess the condition of the underground workings. After that, we will undertake the final stages of remediation before we resume development work. After reviewing our progress and successes thus far, the regulator in December approved a new 4-year license for Cigar Lake. This approval coincides with our own increasing confidence as we move toward production in mid-2013. In the coming weeks, we will release the detailed technical report on Cigar Lake that will provide further clarity on our plans to mine this extremely valuable deposit. Bringing Cigar Lake into production remains a cornerstone of our goal of doubling Cameco's uranium output. We intend to produce 40 million pounds before this decade is out. World uranium supply must grow to meet the demand being created by the global nuclear renaissance. Skeptics who dismiss the idea of a nuclear renaissance ignore the accelerating momentum. They look at the entire global reactor fleet and see that in 2009, there was no net gain in reactors. However, this overlooked the more than 50 reactors in various stages of construction or final planning, and many of these will be fueled and ready to start operations by the middle of this decade. In China alone, state planners want the electrical output of their nuclear power sector to increase sixfold by 2020. 11 units are now operating, and construction is underway on 20 more at 10 different sites, with others being planned. And that's just in China. India is already reaping the benefits of nuclear cooperation by supplementing their own domestic uranium fuel supply. Currently, some 4,500 megawatts of electricity comes from existing nuclear plants in India. By 2020, the government wants to have at least 20,000 megawatts of installed nuclear capacity. This could rise to 63,000 megawatts by 2030 through building clusters at new reactors, existing sites, plus the addition of at least 5 new nuclear energy parks. In South Korea, which operates 20 reactors currently, there are 6 reactors under construction and 6 more in the planning stage. In Korea, we have seen recently joined the world of new plant vendors with the successful sale of 4 reactors to the United Arab Emirates and aggressive plans to do more in other developing countries. As a result of this new build activity, utility companies from South Korea and Japan are joining Chinese and Russian state companies in a competition to be an investment partner in new uranium projects around the world. These decisions to build new reactors are all being made in the emerging economic powerhouses of Asia and the Middle East. The countries in the West, where nuclear energy programs were pioneered, are also taking steps to renew and expand their capacity. In the U.S., it has taken a year for the new administration to realize the benefits of nuclear energy and settle on a path that will address climate change in a meaningful way. Last week, President Obama declared his clear preference for nuclear power as a baseload generating source. The first loan guarantee of $8.3 billion has been earmarked for 2 new units in Georgia at Southern Company's plant Vogtle, where site preparation is already underway. As a result of the administration's commitment to an expanded loan guarantee program, the planning and regulatory process will continue, and other utilities will move forward in the coming months. In the United Kingdom, construction of new nuclear plants remains the leading contender for heading off the looming power shortage in that country. As we have said, we need to look beyond today's relatively weak spot market price for uranium. This current reality reflects the fact that the world's utilities are well covered for the next few years when relatively few new reactors will start up. But with a total of 53 reactors in various stages of construction around the world, suppliers must take steps now to meet this increase in demand. And that is why Cameco is building upon our reserves and resources to take advantage of the opportunities that are coming. In the past 3 years, our well-funded exploration program, working within our own extensive land base, has paid benefits to Cameco. Additions to our reserves and resources exceeded production by an average of 15 million pounds per year in each of the last 3 years. We intend to continue to build upon this resource endowment to achieve organic growth as we go forward. However, the acquisition option remains open. And on that point, let me reiterate our strategy. Our financial position at the end of 2009 is strong, including $1.3 billion in available cash. But let us be clear, the money is not burning a hole in our pockets. The financial position gives us great flexibility. We intend to take our time to ensure that any new investment will bring real value to our shareholders. With both an enviable balance sheet and an extraordinary reserve and resource base to build upon, Cameco has a number of pathways to reach our goal of doubling production. But you can rest assured that the pathways we pick will be the ones that will add the best long-term value to Cameco. And with that, I'll turn the call over to the operator for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take questions from investors, analysts, and media. In order to respect everyone's time on the call today, we will take your question and allow one follow-up question. Then, if you have further questions, please return to the queue, and we'll get to them after others have had their chance. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset and then press star 1. To cancel your question, please press pound. So please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register. Thank you for your patience. Our first question is from David Snow of Energy Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. You said you were able to walk through the 480-meter level of Cigar. I'm wondering, how does the water damage to the walls of the mine look? Does it seem the mine walls have retained their integrity?
Yep. Tim, you want to go ahead and handle that one?
Yeah, David, we have had people down there looking around, moving out from the cage, and it looks pretty good. In fact, it looks a little bit better than we might have expected, so we're pretty happy about that.
And is that the main level that you've got to go to? I can't remember.
Yeah, that would be the main level we'll be working on.
Great. And could you just give me a little idea as to how you expect the DOE stockpiles to interplay over the next few years with the market? You mentioned that the utilities are covered up for the next few years relatively well. Does the DOE become an elephant in the room as a result of that balance before they came along, or what's your view?
Yeah, we'll toss that one to George.
Yes. Well, David, you're right. The DOE sales have been disruptive, certainly a negative impact on the market. They will continue through 2010. And it's always interesting the manner in which DOE sells uranium always has the maximum negative impact on the market. They've come to realize that, and so Secretary Chu has signaled that they do not intend to barter uranium after the 2010 fiscal year.
They're not going to sell after the fiscal 10?
After 2010, they said they will not barter uranium. Now, how do I put this politely? not always lived up to statements that they've made in the past, so it remains to be seen, but that is what the Secretary has said at this time.
Thank you. Our next question is from Lawrence Smith of Scotia Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Sort of two questions. First, on the fourth quarter, I was trying to understand how the fourth quarter looked, and you didn't provide fourth quarter income statement. I'm wondering if you could kind of help me with, like, what would the effective tax rate have been in Q4, and related to that, you know, going forward, you're guiding to a sub 5% tax rate in 2010. At what point, you know, do you expect that your tax rates would become, you know, sort of more normal, you know, certainly well into double digits? Thank you.
Thank you. Kim?
Yeah, I don't have the fourth quarter tax rate right in front of me, but it would not have been that different than the full years. As to how long it will stay in that range, we really don't project that kind of number out. It will be here with us for a while still.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Newcrest. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to explore the reserves at Cigar a little bit. They seem to have come down both in terms of tons in proven and actually the grade is said is down 18% on average. What exactly is going on there?
Tim, you want to go ahead and handle that one?
So, thank you. As we normally do, as we have to do, we update our reserve and resource estimates from time to time. We've done that now given some of the increased information we have on Cigar Lake. What I would say is that we're delighted to still have over 200 million pounds in the reserve category. Of course, half of that, our share, 105 million pounds. We have done a bit of reinterpretation of some of the envelopes and some block modeling, and so that's given us more information, but as I say, we're still very happy with where the reserves come out.
And Greg, I'd say, you know, the added information, a slight reduction, I don't think that's, you shouldn't read anything into that, and all of this was independent of the water. It's just added geotechnical information and look at the various categories, and as Tim said, we're after all of this ecstatic that we still have over 200 million pounds of I think high grade. Yes, the grades come down a little bit, but I don't think that's all that material.
Okay, fair enough. And just a quick follow-up: you provided your production guidance out to 2014, and you say Cigar will be in production by mid 2013, but it's not actually included in your longer-term guidance.
Yeah, if you look in the MDA, there's a little footnote that says the technical report will cover that.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Our next question is from Borden Putnam from Mayone Capital. Please go ahead.
Can't hear you, Borden. Are you there?
I'm sorry. I must have had the phone on me. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I'm sorry about that. Maybe over to Tim first. At the hearings in November, Grant Goddard was speaking, and he mentioned that the 265 level is going to be abandoned and completely filled with backfilled with concrete, and you're going to make the 480 level your primary production level, and also that will be your freeze wall drilling level. Can you explain a little bit more what work's going to be involved with that and why that decision was taken?
Yeah, Borden, that's the, I think you said 265, it would be the 465.
I'm sorry.
Where we had the initial inflow, and you're right. We are looking at moving down to the 480 level to do both production and freezing, and I think if you can be patient with us for another couple of weeks, the technical report will be out on Cigar, and we'll explain all of that, but that is indeed the way we're moving.
Okay, and a follow-up to Greg Barnes' questions on the reserves. I also was a little surprised with the reclassification. And Jerry, about 3 years ago, you and I talked about this, and I was concerned about the, you know, the risk of carrying proven reserves with a mine that was flooded and where you were reevaluating going in. And now you've downgraded 136 million pounds into probable, and it looks like a total of 15 million pounds were just lost, that they've actually been written off. Can you give us, I mean, you've done 2 years, almost 3 years of additional work in drilling. What have you learned in that period about the relief on the unconformity or faulting down there that has caused you to, in other words, what led to this reclassification decision, if you can help us all?
The statement about loss, Borden, I don't think is correct. There's a very minor reduction of, 7 or 8 million pounds. Fundamentally, I think, and all of this, I emphasize, had nothing to do with the inflow, other than all of the additional information that we've gathered geotechnical as a result of all of the extensive drilling has allowed us to begin to look with newer technology using the three-dimensional models and not the typical models of 3 or 4 or 5 years ago that were two-dimensional. I'd say that's really, given the categories that we live with, has now caused the shift from proven to probable. But I think the happy news and the thing that we're delighted with is it's remained relatively static even within those classifications.
Okay, thanks. I had tallied up about 14.7 million pounds difference between the two when I looked at all the reclassifications.
Yeah, and I'm talking Cameco share.
Yes, I was working on gross numbers. That's all we had in the Thank you.
You bet. And I'd say finally, technical report comes out, it'll go into a lot more detail on exactly, you know, where and distribution and these kinds of things.
Will you have a call at that release, or will it be the next quarter, Jerry?
No, I think it'll be the next quarter.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star one at this time. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset, then make your selection. Our next question is from Duncan McKean from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Oh, thanks very much. Gentlemen, it's just with the new startup date for Cigar Lake in mid-2013, I was wondering if you could give us just some guidance on what would be the key milestones between now and then in terms of what you're looking at, the order of operations in terms of restoring that mine.
Well, I'll just make an early comment. Is we're early days yet in sort of walking through the 480 level and looking at everything. Then you've got whatever further remediation will need to be done, and that's sort of yet to be determined. We had said, I think, in an earlier release that hopefully October is kind of a next milestone. Maybe it'll be earlier, maybe a little bit later. It's kind of day by day, month by month as we go and figure out what's happened. Tim indicated that so far what we've seen looks like it's in better shape than what we had anticipated. So I'd say in that time frame, and then the technical report itself will have some milestones in it, but I think we feel comfortable with the mid-2013 date in terms of commencing production, and we'll try to work back from there. But Tim, do you have anything to add to that?
Other than some of the longer lead items, we want to get the freezing back on, obviously, and then shaft 2 sinking. So those would be a couple of the bigger tickets.
Would you have the freezing back on in this calendar year? And then once it comes on, how long does it take to fully establish the freeze walls again?
I'm not sure we know that yet, whether we'll be able to. You know, it'll depend on the condition of the mine. And as Jerry said, it's really early days. They're just venturing out from the cage right now, and there's mud on the floor that has to be cleaned up, and then we've got to renew the infrastructure down there. So it's really a bit early for us to say, and Well, again, if you can bear with us, even the 6 weeks to do the technical report, we'll have more information there.
Yep, understood. Thanks very much, gentlemen.
Thank you. Our next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Newcrest. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I guess this is for George. Can you give us an idea of what is going on in the spot market? The price has been quite weak, and you know, volumes have been relatively low. Do you see that changing for the balance of the year?
At this point, Greg, our view, I mean, you're absolutely right, the utilities are well covered in the near term, so, and the demand that we see is purely discretionary. You know, the DOE is still selling, as I described earlier, through the first 8 or 9 months of this year. And so right now, I think that is a recipe for probably some weaker prices here in the near term. We are of the view that we think demand is likely to be stronger in the second half of the year than it will be in the first half of the year. Our projections are for a spot market of somewhere between 25 and 35 million pounds in total. So, you know, bottom line, I guess it all equates to near-term weakness and but some larger demand by the end of the year.
I guess UX dropped their longer-term price again this week to $62,
yes.
Or $60, I guess.
Yes.
What do you see going on in the longer-term market?
Well, the longer-term market is quite interesting because really what they're reporting in the longer-term market, as you know, if you read the UX definition, it's the lowest price at which they're aware for a longer-term deal. Longer-term deals now that are being reported that are reflected in those prices are deals that I would say I call them more like midterm deals. They start out looking for a 10 or 15 year deal with first deliveries in 13 or 14, prices would be well above that $60. So that's what that $60 represents. Obviously, the weaker you see the spot price, it does have an influence, on that long term price. I think that's what we see occurring today. But the longer term fundamentals remain very positive, and that's the way we see it playing out.
So what's well above 60, George? Percentage-wise.
65, 70 bucks, at least.
65, 70? Okay,
yeah.
Great. Thanks, George.
Thank you. The next question is from Borden Putnam from My Own Capital. Please go ahead.
I had a question on MacArthur River, if I could. You've obviously succeeded in going through the unconformity with development, which is pretty exciting. And I look back on that 43-101 report, and I wonder why you didn't use box hole boring technique there, because it looks like the configuration would be about perfect for that, and it might be a little safer method. Is that just not entirely ready to be used at MacArthur right now?
Yeah, I think that's the sum of it. We're still experimenting with box hole, and frankly, the configuration in zone 2 there, I think, is probably more conducive to what we've done. Gives you a lot more flexibility.
Okay. I had another question on the financials, and this I may be reading things wrong here, but on page 40 of the AIF, you gave a little bit more. Actually, it's not. It's the MD&A. Excuse me. You gave a little bit more detail on unit costs than you have in the past, I think, and they're up 23% for your produced material. But in that same period, your volumes are. You have a greater contribution from ISL production. It's gone from 11% to 22% of total production. So I was a little surprised, if I'm reading this right, that the costs have gone up. Can you talk about where those additional cost increases or where the cost increases have come from in your other operations?
I think if you take a look at some of the words there, part of that is royalties, and I'll toss it to Kim here in a minute. But remember, during the period, Inkai has been ramping up, and while it ramps up, you're going to necessarily see higher unit costs that flow back in. So part of it's royalties, part of it is just Inkai ramping up, and we're still very, very positive about Inkai and its future contribution and its future cost profile. And the balance of it would be labor and reagents and some of these things, some of which we saw come down during the year, but labor, of course, hasn't. But Kim, you got further comments on this?
No, you've touched on the key pieces there, Gordon, was the incremental contribution or added cost associated with ramping up at Inkai, and then the extra royalties, which we've described on that same page there.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from David Snow of Energy Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was rather curious when you talked about the DOE buttering. That's their word for sales. Those are basically the way they've been disposing.
That's right. What they do is they barter their uranium, in this case, to USEC at this point, to pay for the cleanup work that USEC is doing.
Okay, and did it appear that change in sales? Profile coincided with Obama's commitment a year after taking office to support more aggressively nuclear power, or do you not see a connection?
I'm not so sure that I see a connection. I think it's more choose recognition that they are indeed having a very significant impact on the uranium markets and more recognition of that.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Simon Tonkin from Thomas Weisel. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I just wondered if I could have a breakdown of the CapEx in 2010. I think you got $552 million. What are you planning to spend that on?
Kim, you want to go through that?
Sure. Simon, in the MD&A, it's on page 36. We have a table showing by site where the expenditures are.
Okay.
But the bulk of that... on the growth front is at Cigar, and on the sustaining capital, the largest component is at MacArthur River Key Lake, and so the explanations are there on page 36.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The next question is from Ian Howitt from National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, everybody. This should be pretty simple. Just on page 3 of the release, you talk about expiration being between 90 and 95, and then 40 at Kintyre Inkai. What would be the amount you're actually expensing on the income statement?
Kim?
Yeah, it would be that full amount.
Okay.
Yep.
So for Inkai and that, they're not in because you don't have established reserves and operating history. That was just there to confuse me.
Yeah, that is the point, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The next question is from Ben Eliash from Stern Energy. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Your targets to double uranium production by 2018 are certainly very encouraging, and when we look at the reserve and resource base, I think you have enough to back that up, as well as, you know, good low-cost operations. But, you know, when we get to 2018, and if you have doubled production, the profile of the nuclear fleet is very different. Do you think there's going to be a lack of capacity in enrichment, and how does that sort of affect your thoughts? So, you know, with your cash balance, your desire to make acquisitions, and I think in September at your analyst day, you certainly alluded to more vertical integration. How do we think about the opportunity either on the fuel side, uranium mining side, or on the, I guess, fuel fabrication or enrichment side?
Ben, I don't think there'll be any limitation because of enrichment capacity. There's a lot of capacity being added. Obviously, Cameco is part of this new laser technology, and we'll be looking and focusing on that in 2013, and hopefully if it works, that'll be there to help supply enrichment services to the world. So I don't think that's a limitation. Focus, as we tried to demonstrate or illustrate through the MD&A, is on getting the production level doubled, and you've noted that properly so, that we've certainly got the reserve and resource base to do it from lower cost properties that we've been putting together over the years. So I don't think there's any constraints out there. We believe very strongly that given the construction activity going on in Asia and sort of the renewed interest in Europe and the U.S., that the market will be there. And I think the supply side is responding, particularly with respect to enrichment. I think the issue is, can the production of uranium side, can the suppliers catch up, given the fact that there are major issues come 2013 with supply
okay.
In the middle of the decade, I'd say.
And if I could just follow up, there's, you know, Energy Solutions is actually having that conference call in there on the back end, and what we're seeing there, and I think you referenced that earlier on the call, is the DOE is paying for a lot of site cleanup by bartering or selling a lot of uranium. Do you foresee that longer term, as, you know, the U.S. government sort of broke?
George, you want to, without commenting on the solvency of the U.S. government?
Right. Okay. The answer would be yes. You know, in the near term here, by the near term, I mean in the next few years, CHU's indicated they're going to barter this year. Given the impact it's had on the market, they won't barter next year. But certainly in future years, we'd expect that material to make its way to the market. The thing to keep in mind is it's not all is natural uranium. Some of that material has to be processed and comes over, you know, a period of time, et cetera. But eventually, yes, it will come to the market.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from David Wargo of GMP. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a quick question with regards to the Global Laser Enrichment Program. Can you maybe go into a bit more detail on where the program stands, if there's any test results that you might be able to share, and what your feeling is on probability of the technology working? I mean, you did spend $125 million on your percentage stake, and I'm hoping it's more than we hope it works.
Yeah, we are too. George, you wanna cover that up?
Sure. The program is currently running what's called a test loop, so it's in the test phase, and in fact, should be winding up over the course of the next month or so. Of course, there has to be then a lot of interpretation of the results from the test work, and we'll have an expert representing us, looking at those results, et cetera. So we expect to have a better sense of the technical go/no-go decision, certainly by mid-year. And at this point, I guess all we can say is, we're still very optimistic. So we'll know more probably in a few months.
You actually have they have enriched uranium up to a certain level then from the test program?
Yeah, I we're not not free to discuss you know any of the results of that work, so I'm not able to respond to that.
Okay, and then one last question with regards to pricing. Just to confirm, you're seeing pricing past 2012 on the term market in and around $65 to, say, $75 a pound. Is that safe to assume?
But what I'm telling you is that the prices that are being reported by the publisher, those that publish price, are more reflective of what I'm calling a shorter-term deal. And I don't mean real short-term. I mean 2013, 2017, five-year deals, for example. Those are the most aggressive prices being put out. If a utility needs or wants to look at supply that's going to run out, you know, 10, 15 years beyond that, yes, you're going to be looking at prices at least in that range of $65, $70.
Okay. And then just to confirm again on the spot market, you're pretty confident that the volumes are going to pick up in the second half of 2010?
Well, that's the way we see it playing out. I mean, you know, a lot of this depends on, you know, what do utilities do? What happens to the first quarter buying? What do China and India do, et cetera? Normally, you know, in our market, it's never less than, I'm just throwing out averages, 15, and last year was as high as 54. We're saying, you know, for this year, somewhere in the range of 25 to 35. So more of an average year. Yes, last year was certainly a big year in large part related to China.
Thank you. The next question is from Duncan McKean of Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Yep. I just wanted to follow up. We saw some numbers come out, at least reported by Dow Jones, that China had some pretty high uranium imports for January. I guess depending, the units weren't clear, but depending on the conversion, it looked like it was between, say, 7.3 and 8.7 million pounds imported for that country just for that month. So wondering if you had any color or clarity on that, and also if you had an estimate of what you think China may represent in the spot market this year compared to the over 12 million pounds that they did last year. Thanks.
Sure.
I saw that number as well and found it quite interesting. You're right, it's somewhere between 7 and 10 million pounds. And, you know, my view on that, I guess I don't read too much into it. I mean, it suggests that that's what came in a single month. Perhaps that's true. If it is, I'd say that that's maybe somewhat of a coincidence. I wouldn't suggest they're going to import 10 million pounds a month, you know, over the course of this year. So I guess I'm just saying I'm looking at that a little bit suspect. But, yeah, last year we expected or we believe they purchased in excess of 12 million pounds. This year we have them. Our forecast is for 5 to 6 million pounds. We know that they will be active. And maybe we're taking a bit of a conservative view, but that's our forecast.
If the nuclear build-out in China just keeps expanding each year, why would you expect them to be about half the level this year that they were last year?
Well, you know, I guess it's all related to timing and also the fact that we expect that they would not be just making spot purchases but also entering into term purchases. Now we're talking about spot purchases. So they will enter into term purchase contracts over time. Right now, everybody talks about all the quantities they've been buying in the spot market. They, to our knowledge, they've not been particularly active in terms of term purchases. We know they will be, and as they are, then they may have less of an influence on the spot market.
Okay. Do we have any indication of what they've purchased in the spot market so far this year?
I don't know.
Okay. Super. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from Borden Putnam of My Own Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Tim, one last question for you. On the four-year license at Cigar, there was a discussion during your hearings in November that phase five of the remediation at Cigar Lake, which is the normal line development and construction, the CNSC was suggesting this might be held back until the new mine plan is submitted, and I take it that that's not a part of the 43-101. So when will you have a new mine plan and be able to submit it to CNSC?
Well, I think you'll see part of that. You'll see that coming forward with our technical report. We have a new mine plan, and if not completed, close, so you'll see that within a few weeks.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Orest Tawalkado from Canaccord Adams. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just two questions around Cigar Lake. Should we anticipate that the remediation expenses that we're seeing on the income statement essentially stop in as of now, and everything just go through the CapEx line is the first question. And secondly, can you give us any, you've given us an indication of startup timeline and CapEx, but can you give us any idea on where you expect cash costs to be at Cigar Lake on a per pound basis?
Kim, the first one, my recollection is a little bit yet to go through, what, $25 million or something like that?
That's correct. We have $29 million in total ORIS, of which 25 of the 29 is in 2010 remediation costs.
And is that included in the, your revised CapEx number?
No, it's a separate. That will be expensed.
That will be
okay.
And the cash cost will come through the technical report. So.
Okay. Thought I'd try. Thanks very much.
You bet.
Thank you. The next question is from Lawrence Smith of Scotia Capital. Please go ahead.
Sorry, a follow-up question on capital. And it's probably a definitional issue. You talk about sustaining capital at MacArthur Key Lake of $220 million, but that includes $80-some million for a new acid plant. Longer term, I mean, you know, what would it, instead of a true sustaining number be, you know, taking out one-off items like that? Thank you.
Tim, go ahead.
Sustaining capital at MacArthur Key Lake would be normally, Kim can correct me, but somewhere in the $50, $40 million a year range.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Sam Trainum from Energy Intelligence. Please go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to follow up on the GLE project. I know GE was saying in 2008 they were expecting to make a decision on whether to go ahead with a commercial plant in early 2009, and then in July they told us they were expecting that decision in late 2009, and it still doesn't seem to be on the horizon. I'm wondering what's slowing things down.
Sam, they didn't really begin the test until the middle of last year, like July.
Mm-hmm.
So they were a little bit behind. I don't think they were as behind post our entry as you might suggest. So we viewed it as being around 6 months behind. So now they're talking about the middle part of this year for this go no go decision. George, if you have anything to add to that or not?
Yeah, that's on the technology. I mean, there's still work to be done after that before you make a commercial decision to finally go forward. But on the technology, the decision is expected around the mid this year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from David Snow of Energy Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I usually ask about the other low-cost supply source, and that's Kazakhstan. Can you give us an update on the profile of what they did last year versus year before at this point, and what your expectations are going forward, and are there any specific new hurdles?
David, just to clarify, you're talking about Kazakhstan in its
overall
entirety,
country.
Overall yeah. Country. George,
yep.
Can you...
Last year we had them, in 2008, they produced around 22 million pounds. In 2009, we had them up quite significantly, and right now I'm having trouble recalling the number.
1/7.
Yeah, I was thinking, was it 36?
I don't know for sure.
In the mid-30s somewhere.
Yeah, anyway, they were up quite significantly, and they're expected to be up again this year. You know, the view is, you know, that rate of increase just can't keep going. You know, that they're starting to reach, you know, some practical limits there, and that certainly expansions beyond that, you know, don't come inexpensively, that, you know, the production costs be significantly higher. Kazakh themselves have expressed concern about how quickly their, you know, their production is expanding.
You have a number for this year?
Well, you are going to quote me on this, but...
No, I won't.
Somebody will.
Somebody will. I believe the number is something close to 40 million pounds.
Okay. And do you have one out in the mid-century, 15 or something?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star one at this time. Our next question is from Ralph Profiti from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. Just looking at the sales guidance of 31 to 33 and trying to get a better breakdown, do you still anticipate sort of 7 million pounds or so as your share of HEU sales? And that would put previous spot market purchases at around sort of 2.5 to 4.5 million pounds. Is that the right math?
George?
Yes, generally that's the right math.
Okay, great. Then just follow up with sort of the, you know, weaker prices in uranium. Have we seen the floor prices and the ceiling prices move around at all? You know, we've heard before that floor prices were in the mid $40 a pound. Have those held firm? And same question for the ceilings, which over the last couple of years have hovered around $100 a pound.
Well, I'll answer for us. It has, because you know, we're very heavily committed through 2016. So really, when we're talking about new sales commitments, we're talking about commitments that go well beyond that. And given our view of the long-term fundamentals of the market, we've not been willing to discount our floor prices below that you know, mid 40 or $40 range, and also the ceiling prices haven't changed either.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Sam Trainum of Energy Intelligence. Please go ahead.
Hi. In the MD&A, I noticed that it was talking a little bit about how you guys missed your sales volume projections by a smidgen for this year, and it talks about that being a result of the delayed delivery of about 1 million pounds because of a logistical issue. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could tell me more about
that. Have you ever heard the story about the slow boat to China?
I sure have.
Okay.
So literally the boat was just slow on the way to China?
Yes.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. This will conclude the questions from the telephone lines. I would now like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. Jerry Grandy for his closing remarks.
Okay, operator, thank you very much. Well, a new year and a new decade, I think, bringing a little bit of renewed optimism that sustained economic recovery will now be achieved. We've seen that countries that were least impacted by the global recession are the ones that are making their massive investments in infrastructure to generate electricity, obviously intended to sustain their growth. So as these countries with large populations modernize, we believe that baseload nuclear is emerging as the leading reliable clean energy source. And as we've said repeatedly, Cameco intends to remain the global leader. We work to fulfill that bright future by supplying uranium to generate the clean electricity for all of the good customers that we have out there in the various regions of the world. So we thank you all for joining us on the call today, and certainly for your support of Cameco. Thank you.
Thank you. The Cameco Corporation fourth quarter and year-end results conference call has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. We thank you for your participation, and have a great day.